Welcome to Greens vs. Blacks, a weekly House of the Dragon podcast. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Michelle. Very excited, Michelle.
We're two House of the Dragon fans who have decided to rewatch and recap season one whilst we wait impatiently for season two. Join us as we explore the lore and mythology of Westeros and the rise and fall of House Targaryen.
Ooh! So there were squeals of excitement through the realm this last week as HBO dropped not one,
but two.
Runneth over two trailers. For
Who's
the new
mopping
season.
Up after all of our cuts?
Yeah, it's an embarrassment of riches, and I think it's also just genius marketing. I mean, they've leant right into the title of this podcast. They obviously saw this podcast and responded to it. Nothing to do with the fact that it's already in the books. Greens or
no,
blacks?
It's us. We're driving this forward. Yeah.
And I love the tagline, the all must choose. It's really laying out the stakes. We also now have a broadcast date.
I've chosen, by the way.
Are you going to tell?
No. That would spoil it. What would be the point?
Well,
you can guess.
I'm quite happy.
Look at the way I'm dressed.
We're wearing blue.
Look at the neckline on this dress.
You're wearing blue. That's no house. I, on the other hand, am in my house colour.
You're clearly repping.
Yeah.
House black.
Yes, I'm here for the blacks. Obviously, I do struggle sometimes to understand how anyone could be a green team green, okay. But I guess someone has to.
Yep.
I think the show is putting its thumb on the scale of the blacks.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, didn't we?
I think so. I think they have tried to make you feel sorrier for Alicent. I think they've tried very hard to kind of make her motivations more understandable, because I think it would be very easy to simply see her and her whole family as usurpers. But if she genuinely thought that Viserys was talking about Aegon, it's really simple. But anyway, there's so much to talk about.
And I think there's elements of that in the trailers that we're about to watch as well.
But one thing I would say is obviously we've got June 16th for our release date, so we can now plan our whole schedule for season two.
Whole life is now just...
And the summer, it'll be June, July and mid-August, I guess.
We won't see the sun. We'll just be indoors reading Fire
season.
And Blood.
An eight-week season this time, not 10. So,
that's interesting.
Yeah, they're making it more compact and bijou.
And you know what? I really hope it's eight episodes in a row and not four and four.
Oh, no, it will be eight.
I hate that.
Yeah, it'll be eight in a row. Who did that? The Crown did that. And it's really annoying.
And we knew what was coming.
And you just get into that rhythm of like, I'm going to watch this thing. And then it's just like, that's it now. And you're left hanging. I don't find that particularly tantalizing. I prefer a weekly drop of an episode
that forces
you to wait. Because that's like the old school way, rather than binging everything in one go.
I think it's some sort of clever marketing plan that's gone wrong, because when shows are released in blocks, what often happens to me is I just forget to watch the next four.
Unless you really, really, really love it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I have to say that I think HBO, their marketing, I have heard, and I don't know.
What's the inside
gloss? Anecdotally, but I have heard that not everyone realises that there are two trailers. So they've kind of split the audience, and some are watching Team Green and some are watching Team Black. And apparently the download numbers have not been as high as high as they could have been. But so if you have only watched one, watch both. There are two. But I'm hoping that over the weekend, maybe.
Oh, no, I love that idea. This is like a huge social experiment. Yeah. It's like proper propaganda.
Last week, the numbers were not that high, but I'm hoping that over the weekend, more people maybe will have caught up with what's happening. But I think this is really clever marketing. I think it's really well done. And
they are beautiful. Yeah, they're beautiful trailers.
Yeah, the trailers are beautiful and the banners are beautiful. And I think that they are... As I said, really leaning into this binary opposition. Pick a side. The time for sitting on the fence is over. We are at war.
Shall we watch the green trailer?
Let's watch it.
Right, let's watch it.
Many weeks ago, my lord husband was alive and the realm was at peace. On his deathbed, he knew the realm would never accept a queen. Rhaenyra's supporters will believe what they wish. But Viserys wanted Aegon to succeed him.
They wish now not for the good of the realm, but for the satisfaction of vengeance.
Plot against the king, and I will pay it back 100 times over. I'm as fearsome as any of them.
Oh. You have no idea the sacrifices that were made to put you on that throne.
My uncle is a challenge I welcome. If he dares face me.
We will prevail and bring forth peace. But you must accept that the path to victory now is one of violence.
Good. To war, then.
All my life, I've endeavored to serve both my house and the realm. And somehow none of it matters.
Hold to your courage! For the one true king, Aegon!
And breathe.
I didn't breathe through the whole of that.
You're like a pearl diver. That's impressive. So many emotions.
All the emotions.
So happy as well.
Yeah. I'm just always glad to be back in Westeros. And one of the things that I do like about these two trailers is obviously if there'd only been one, we'd have had a certain amount of content. But we get twice the content.
Absolutely.
More scenes,
if
more
you know
people.
That there are two trailers, yes. To watch those, as you've spelled out.
So it's great. So we open with Alicent in the Sept, which is a nice callback to the scene in episode 2 with Rhaenyra when they're surrounded by candles, talking about their dead mothers. Alicent in a voiceover is setting the scene for where we are. It's almost like a previously on, but she's explaining that Viserys changed his mind on his deathbed and named Aegon his successor. We then see Aegon in the crown of the Conqueror sitting on the Iron Throne.
And she's completely convinced she's right. I mean, this is a couple of weeks on from Viserys' death, and she's convinced that the realm would never have accepted Rhaenyra as queen. We don't know.
Probably. But this is part of, I think we'll keep banging on about this. All of these things that happen because, Targaryens need more names. There are like two Aegons even in this next generation. And pick another name. Call him Jimmy. And then it would have been
Jimmy Targaryen. Yeah. A bit close to Jimmy Tarbuck.
But, you know, if they either had other names or Viserys had written it down and just said, no, I mean Rhaenyra. If you're not sure who you're talking to, then don't say weird things.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, by this point, he was so out of it and addled on Milk of the Poppy. But succession planning is everything when you are the king.
Just a £15.99 will kit from the internet is your friend in these instances. But the thing is, he invested Rhaenyra and they've gone against that. So
they would have
gone
against
it. Like, what would a bit of paperwork?
They would have gone against it anyway.
Have done.
But I think Alicent is using it as her justification for going along with it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think she might have been more reluctant if she hadn't had this misunderstanding.
Yes. We also see in this opening scene, Otto Hightower reverently bowing to Aegon as he approaches the Iron Throne. But there is a momentary look of doubt or anxiety that passes over his face as if, oh, is he?
I think he's like, this guy's a douche.
I was going to be a bit more nuanced in my political analysis here of what's happening in the Red Keep. No, but he's just a loser.
He's a douche. He's going, God, my grandson is an absolute waste of space.
But he sees himself as this Svengali Machiavellian puppeteer, doesn't he? So I think he's thinking, can I actually control this boy king?
There's that as well. And I think, you know, we'll keep coming back to this, but I think, you know, you can see with Aegon, he's really young. He's just puffed up with his position. There's no attempt at all to kind of say, what are we doing? What's our strategy?
It's the pageantry of kingship.
Yeah, it's just like, let's go.
Yeah.
And I think Otto's probably as often is wondering if this was actually the best thing for the realm. I agree with the whole thing about, I don't think he's as bad as Joffrey. He hasn't like killed anyone yet with a crossbow or beaten them to death.
He's definitely got Joffrey vibes going on.
Yeah.
And you were saying before we started recording that whole kind of 180 from season one, where he's, I think Aemon's got him in a headlock and saying, you will be king.
And he's like, I don't want to be king. And now he's like, I want to be king more than anything. It's the best. It's the best.
We all know people like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I think, you know, you see it in the scene when in the dragon pit before Rhaenys busts through the floor, where people start cheering for him. And then suddenly, because nobody really liked him.
No.
I mean, everyone was just a bit like, ugh.
Aegon the dweeb.
Yeah. And then suddenly, you know, the small folk who obviously know nothing about him.
I love your term for the peasantry, the small folk.
That's what they're called.
They're like, they're backing singers.
But, you know, they're like, hey, hey,
are they
yeah.
called the small folk? Yeah, yeah. Oh, I stand corrected. Yeah. I just thought you were being sassy.
No, I didn't make that up. It's George.
Oh, George. George Thanks, did George,
it.
For...
But yeah, it's. I think it's just, you know, they see him. They see a man, which is obviously they've been kind of going, we need a man. They see a man wearing the crown of the Conqueror and carrying the sword of the Conqueror. So he's got all the
he's
paraphernalia.
He's got all the accoutrements, hasn't he? Yeah. All the symbolism. Yeah. The small folk are not hot on their critical thinking.
Then and they're just kind of going, they're that girl, whatever. Who cares about her?
Well, they're in a position of, well, a period of peace. They just want consistency at this point. Completely. I mean, if a dog turned up with a rosette and a crown.
No, that's the Tories.
Sorry.
oh, we keep getting political on
this
one.
Oh, sorry about that.
But yes, I mean, I think Aegon was kind of like, I don't want this. I'll be a terrible king. He was probably right. But here we are. we see the new green banners. So what's happened here is that House Hightower...
Hightower?
Why is House Hightower so hard to say? House Hightower.
Oh, I'm slipping up on
it
now.
It's difficult. Anyway, the green banners are the green of House Hightower.
Hoot.
Overlaid with a gold dragon.
Yeah, which, this was nice. Yeah. What was the gold dragon though?
It's Sunfire, which is Aegon's dragon, which apparently is the most beautiful dragon ever.
Okay, it's says who? Golden. Aegon.
George R. R. Martin.
Oh, okay. as voted for by the small folk.
Or actually, I think the various historians who write Fire and Blood do describe Sunfire as, I mean, I'm going to find what they actually
Sunfire,
say.
Hottest dragon 5 years in a row.
Oh, yeah. Hang on. What did they say? Sunfire. Oh, no, doesn't say here. Just says mentioned in episode 6. But there is.
Thank
that's
you
useless.
For that.
Thank you, Games Radar. No, he is the most beautiful dragon. He's gold with pink membranes in his wings.
Yes. And he's a looker.
Yeah.
He's got it going on.
We see scorpions being placed on the city walls. Now, these are the giant crossbows that we saw used in Game of Thrones against Dany's dragons.
And I just want to stop us here and say, for me, scorpions are a big deal.
Yeah.
They are the god killers of Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon. And didn't Qyburn say that he invented it?
I think he said...
The scorpion.
Well, he does say that he found a weapon. I can't remember. I think
that
he, whether he uses
with
the
Cersei,
word...
where he fires the bolt through... Is, which dragon
That's,
skull?
Balerion.
Balerion.
Yeah. Basically, I think whether Qyburn's sort of saying he invented it or whether he says he found a reference in an old book and so he's copied it. But essentially, it's a giant crossbow anyway. So this idea that he invented it, it's more like he supersized it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a new device that never existed before. It's a crossbow.
Yeah. And we should remember in Game of Thrones season 5, Drogon is injured. When Bronn fires a bolt from one, he handles it by himself.
Yes. So
I think you meant to have like a team of like 6 people doing it. And sadly, in Game of Thrones season 8, Euron Greyjoy uses a scorpion to shoot down who?
Rhaegal.
Yeah, RIP. R.I.P.
which is could be said to have been part of what sends Dany completely batshit crazy at the end of Game of Thrones.
Yes, I think that's the final blow for her, not to make a bad pun. Also, ominous callback to House of the Dragon lore, and you'll know about this. Queen Rhaenys' dragon, Meraxes, was killed when she was hit in the eye by a bolt. It went straight through into her brain from a scorpion during the First Dornish War, and that killed her instantly. It also caused Rhaenys to fall to her death.
Yes, and so, Rhaenys, thank you for this, because that's...
We're ending bloodlines.
Yes, and that's Aegon's other wife.
Yes.
Aegon the First's younger sister, the one that he actually really loved, as opposed to his older sister, Visenya, who he tolerated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of a Hugh Hefner vibe going on there.
Aegon in his dressing gown.
Anyway, scorpion lesson over.
Scorpions are, I mean, it makes sense that they're putting they're outfitting the city. They're putting scorpions on the city walls. They're getting ready for potential dragon attacks.
Yes.
We see Daemon wearing some really cool armor.
It is cool.
And he's overlooking the black camp. So you can see all these tents and they're obviously, he's just supervising them getting set up, getting ready. But I really like his armor. And also I think it's very clever for them to sort of start showing us what the different people are going to be wearing as we go through, because they may well be wearing helmets and be harder to sort of work out who people are. So if they've got very distinctive...
Let's ID them now so we know who we want to follow.
Yeah.
And I love all of these crazy jump cuts from battle preparation scenes to battle preparation scenes.
It's part of the reason why it's quite difficult to recap this, because it cuts so fast.
It does.
Yeah.
Whoever's cut this needs an award.
they will probably get one. We see Alicent and Otto having a chat, one of their chats. Otto is saying that the Blacks are doing this for revenge. So how self-serving is Otto?
I can't even with Otto.
Yeah.
I want him to redeem himself at some point during season two, season three, season eight.
I don't know if there'll be a season eight. Maybe that could be just Otto's...
Are we going to have a spin-off show?
Otto's like Walk of Shame.
Frasier. Just Otto.
I was going to say, Mea culpa. Mea culpa.
He moves to Essos and becomes a community therapist.
Oh, God. Oh. Can you imagine going to Otto for therapy? No. I mean, he is so self-serving. He's saying the Blacks are doing this for revenge. Of course they are. But he's also implying that it's too late for any kind of diplomatic solution when it was his family that drew first blood.
Yeah.
And it's his family that are usurping the throne. What does he think Rhaenyra is going to do? Just go, oh, okay, fine.
I guess they didn't really plan the first blood incident, though, did they? It kind of just happened. But he's really leaning heavily. Alicent and Otto are really leaning heavily into that chaos that's created, that vortex.
But I mean, I just think that if they thought that Rhaenyra was just going to take the death of her son lying down, they were wrong. I mean, I don't know if you remember the final scene of season one where the vein is literally popping on her forehead. I mean, that is such... I love that performance by Emma Darcy. The way they kind of crumple and then just straighten up and turn to the camera. And you can see that the sorrow and then the rage.
Yeah. It's a fantastic mix of emotions. And they are an incredible actor.
With no dialogue, just everything done through the face. I think it's an amazing scene.
And I was going to say here, we've got Otto brilliantly cut with a shot of Rhaenyra giving us a little half smirk. Mm. But no one's outwardly anguished or happy. The emotions are so difficult to read in this trailer.
Well, I think, I mean, they know. On the one hand, I think Rhaenyra does believe that what she's doing is right. But on the other hand, everyone knows that, I mean, war sucks.
Yeah, kids, war sucks. Less war, please.
Don't do it,
Less
okay?
War.
So, yes, I think it's really difficult. Now, we see these two characters. I'm going to name them as Blood and Cheese in the tunnels underneath King's Landing. I'm not going to say any more about that because it is a spoiler.
Yeah.
So there's shenanigans in tunnels. Let's leave that there.
With Blood and Cheese.
With Blood and Cheese. And Daemon.
They sound like puppies.
No one calls a puppy blood.
who calls a puppy cheese?
Well, cheese is slightly less, but blood's awful.
Okay, fine.
Sorry, if you wanted to name your
puppy.
No,
I don't have a puppy called Blood.
Well, if you ever wanted to have a puppy called Blood, then...
Likewise, if you wanted to call your puppy Cheese, I'd be happy with that. I'd support you.
I think we will support each other with these strange names.
Yes.
But I'm just imagining being in the park going, come on, Blood! It's just,
Cheese, put it down.
Yeah, cheese slightly less weird. So as we said, Aegon, having been like, I don't want this, I just want to go and live somewhere wanking out of windows, is now fully invested.
Nicely put, Michelle.
It's now fully invested in being the king and kicking the Black's asses. He's had a war helmet made and he's put Aegon's crown.
Yes.
I don't know whether he's actually melded it to it or it's just sort of propped on it.
I think it's got to be smelted because if you're propping something like that, it's heavy. It's going to fall off if you're riding a dragon. Well, he's not going to be riding a dragon, is he?
Yeah.
Oh, he will be.
He will be.
He will be. Yeah.
And he's planning to fight on the battle. He's going to ride Sunfire, the prettiest dragon. We can't just say Sunfire. We have to say the prettiest dragon every time we mention Sunfire. He will be planning to ride. We've never seen Aegon's dragon. We've never seen Aegon riding a dragon. We have no idea if Aegon is actually going to be any good.
Well, that's what I was thinking. I thought he would just hang back as king. He'd be too valuable.
Apparently, he's he's gung-ho to fight. It's all about proving himself. He's saying, I'm as good as anyone.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is I think he's taken on, you know, now he's invested in himself as king. He really wants to prove that he's worthy to be the king. And he feels that that's, maybe it's a bit of Aegon I's vibe. You know, Aegon rode to war on his dragons, fought, conquered. He needs to...
Channeling his grandfather.
Yeah. Great, 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 great.
Great, great, great grandfather. Mm. Channeling his great, great, great grandfather.
I don't know exactly how many greats, but a few. But yes, he's definitely, he's such a knob.
He is. every time he opens his mouth, I hate him more and more.
I don't hate him as much as someone else who we're going to see quite soon.
Okay.
We cut to Harrenhal, which we recognise by those kind of melted candelabra, not candelabra, but like melted candlestick towers.
Yeah.
And Caraxes is perched on top of the ruins. That's the end of that scene.
And we should say we're going to talk more about Harrenhal when we recap episode 6 of season 1.
We will.
The Curse of Harrenhal.
But we have seen Harrenhal, obviously, in season 1.
Yeah.
At the beginning when Jaehaerys masses the realm to talk about the succession. That's at Harrenhal.
The Grand Council.
Yeah. And the reason why, you know why what the melty thing is. You know about all that?
I think so. But tell us.
It was Beleriand.
Yes.
Melted it, because basically the lord who owned Harrenhal thought it was like impregnable and no one, he was safe in behind the walls. And then Aegon just turned up and was like, ha, 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 I've got the biggest dragon and it's going to melt your castle. And that was that. And so there is this idea that it is cursed.
Well, it's the biggest castle in Westeros. Mm. And from the start, it was too big. The lands it's in could never have supported the number of troops that would have been needed to defend it. So kind of there's a bit of a design issue going on there design, as well.
Well, this is the thing about men, and they always think size is everything, you know.
It's designed by a woman.
What woman?
Lady Cheese, the engineer.
I don't believe you. So we see Aemond. And Sir Criston, who has new grown-up hair, and they're talking, and I hate Sir Criston, and Aemond...
Just get that in there.
I've just got to get that out there now. I hate him. He's an incel. Aemond wants to fight Daemon. Aemond, even more in a way than Aegon, is desperate for some sort of glory, and I think he sees... Yeah. He and Daemon are like sort of weird mirror images of each other. They're very similar in that they're second sons. They don't really have that position. So they've got to make their own.
There's almost like a bond there created out of their mutual rejection.
Yeah.
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 And I was going to say, did you know Ewan Mitchell, who brilliantly plays Aemond, was in Saltburn?
Yeah.
You
did. I didn't recognise him when I first saw him. I was staring at him going, I know you from somewhere.
He plays the nerdy mathematician friend.
Who has a weird sort of like outburst of rage at one point.
Who tells the main character, Oliver, that he's going to be rejected by everyone. Mm.
And then is never seen again. But yeah, I do remember just kind of looking at him going, why do I know your face? And then it's like, you put that long platinum wig on him and then it's like, it all makes sense now.
It's a Targaryen
at Oxford. Then we see some small folk on the city walls looking sad. And Alicent is wearing a veil. So she seems to be in mourning. And I also think in this quite a lot.
This is the image from the poster, isn't it?
Yeah, but also quite a lot in this trailer. Alicent's leaning into this kind of nun vibe. She's quite often wearing veils and things, which I don't think she ever did before. The small folk are throwing confetti.
I thought it was ash.
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Or something. But wood chip.
They're throwing stuff and they look sad. Everyone looks sad. So something sad has obviously happened, but we don't know what. Otto then points out, helpfully, that the Greens will win, but there will be violence. It's like, well, yes, Captain Obvious, it's a war. Aegon, once again, is ready to go.
Aegon channeling his inner Bertie Wooster here.
He says, there will be violence. He's like, to war then. God. He's like, you know, in the World War II and they're all like, over the top. And you know.
But I'm going to just hold back a little bit whilst you
He's just over. So ghastly. We see a couple of soldiers squaring up to each other, which again reflects what Otto helpfully has just pointed out, that there will be violence. We think from their sigils that these are knights from House Bracken and House Blackwood. So much easier to say than House Hightower.
Which you just said perfectly.
Yeah. It's when I'm not thinking about it too much. But they have an ancient ancestral feud.
Yes. And we should say, Rey, House Bracken and House Blackwood and their beef, shortly after Aegon's conquest, Queen Visenya negotiated a double wedding between the two families to seal the peace, but that's clearly come undone. Now that we're out of peacetime, well, peacetime's on life support and everything's become quite fragile. We do know from Fire and Blood, well, do you want to tell us that during the Dance of the Dragons...
I did not actually recall this fact.
Oh, okay.
So you can tell it.
I was reading ahead then.
Yes.
The Bracken supported Aegon II.
Well, also, we've seen these people before. In episode 4, when Rhaenyra is doing her bachelorette tour.
Yes.
And a very young boy comes forward and proposes to her. And she's just sitting there going, Jesus. It's like either grandfathers or children. And there's a man sneering from the sidelines. I can't remember which way round it is, but I think the young boy is a Blackwood and the sneery one is a Bracken. And then Rhaenyra just gets up and walks out.
And the
out.
Blackwood kills the Bracken.
Exactly. And because he calls him a cunt.
Yes.
And so even during peacetime, that tension between those two houses is literally just simmering
there. It's that boiling point. Yeah,
all the time. They hate each other. So it's Montagues and Capulets. So it's just interesting to see that they're not just showing... It's a good way to remind us that this is not just going to affect the Targaryens.
No, it's going to seep down into wider society.
The whole realm is being pulled into this fight. We then see Vhagar fly overhead with a tiny Aemon on her back, just in case you've forgotten that she is a beast. She's massive, and he honestly looks like a little doll.
She's the queen of all dragons, apparently.
Well, quite.
And ridden during Aegon's conquest by Visenya.
Yeah, and she's the oldest living dragon now.
More power to her.
We also see Ser Criston. Right. I might have to find another name for him.
Crispy.
No, it was one podcast. They call him Ser 4chan. I like that.
Ser Mansell.
He's riding hell for leather on a horse, but as it's not a dragon, it's not that impressive. He and some other men are riding into a wood. We're not quite sure what they're doing. They could be taking cover.
Getting away from the dragon?
Well, that's possible, but it's not they wouldn't be running away from Vhagar because Vhagar's on their side. So they might be taking cover or they might be chasing someone into the wood. It's just not really clear at this point. Then we see one of the Cargill twins fighting someone. It is either Eric or Harry.
And they're both still on Team Black?
No, one's Team Green, one's Team Black.
Team Black, that's it.
But I can't remember which.
I knew there was something dodgy.
But I think we see one of them in the Black trailer, so it might make it clearer. I think it might be Eric, who's green, and Arik, who's black. But I'm not going to bet on that because I'm not sure.
I'm not going to put any money on that either.
Yeah. Daemon takes Harrenhal. Good.
Yeah, good for him. Mm. The heating bills are going to be astronomical, but... Go for it.
Well, he says, I think in episode 10, I think he is talking about how they need to be on land. They need a base if they're going to fight.
But all his histrionics, he's quite strategic.
Yeah. And what he's saying is that they can then surround King's Land. If they're on Dragonstone, they're off on an island and they need land troops. They can't obviously just do everything with air power. They need a mixture. So if they have Harrenhal, they're quite near to King's Landing. They can surround it with ground troops and the dragons.
Nice move,
and
Daemon.
Take it that way. So it makes sense that, well, you know, rather than them being on Dragonstone and then having to ferry people across, that they need a land base.
Yeah.
We hear Alicent complain. She's bitching.
She does this for the whole trailer, doesn't she? Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Oh, has it turned out like this?
She's basically saying everything sucks.
Well, yeah, it's war. What did she expect?
But I think she honestly thought that she'd only... I think she thought that she had the moral high ground because I think she genuinely does believe that she's done things for the right reasons.
But she can't have thought that Rhaenyra would have backed down on a point of honour.
No, but I think she honestly thought that this is what, as we've said, she thinks this is what Viserys wanted. She thinks that she's done what she, in her lights, she's acted honourably and everything's shit. And she's just sort of like, I don't understand it. And then we have this odd scene of her having a bath, which I'm not quite sure what was going on there. But there's a bit of kind of an Ophelia sort of moment where she goes right under the water.
Yeah, I kind of felt like that was a bit of a single white female 90s thriller moment.
But also maybe
a moment of introspection and
maybe it's
isolation.
Also just saying that now that she no longer has to bathe Viserys' scabby body, she's actually enjoying.
She can have time, light a few candles, crack open the chocolates, yeah. A podcast.
And a nice glass of Dornish red.
Oh, lovely. Honeyed.
Yeah, and chill out in the bath because Viserys is no longer there to have to bathe and coddle.
Exfoliate.
Now we see another dragon. We're not sure who it is. It could be Moondancer or it could be Vermax. Don't ask me who's Vermax's dragon.
They're both green, right?
They're both green, but I can't remember who rides Vermax. That might be Jace. And Moondancer is Baylor's dragon. And they're flying over this forest. So that could be what Tristan was flying from.
Tristan.
Tristan? Kristen.
Sir Forte.
That could be what Sir Kristen was fleeing from, but we don't know. And then we see, now I thought this was Helena's dragon, Dreamfire, because it looks like Dany's dragons. And the one of the lore things is that these Dany's dragons were Dreamfire's eggs.
But it might not be Dreamfire.
But it might be Sea Smoke, I've heard, who is Laenor's dragon.
Ooh, I don't know anything about Sea Smoke.
Sea Smoke, you see Sea Smoke in the battles of the Stepstones. We see a young Laenor.
Oh, yes.
He provides backup.
Yes.
And he's fighting with Daemon. And then when there's that whole switcheroo with the bodies and Laenor goes to Essos with his boyfriend, we don't really know what happens to Sea Smoke then because obviously dragons are bonded to people. So while they're alive, Sea Smoke wouldn't take another rider. So Sea Smoke is just somewhere. It's never mentioned. But so Sea Smoke is back. Who's riding Sea Smoke?
That's the big question.
Yeah. So this could be a mystery that we're setting up for this season. We don't know yet.
Oof. So should we watch the next trailer?
Team Black.
My father chose me. His firstborn child, to succeed him. He held to his decision until death. And yet, Alicent's son sits my throne. I mean to fight this war and win it.
The realm will soon tear itself apart if men do not remember the oath sworn to King Viserys and to his rightful heir.
The Hightowls are marching. You must crush this beast at its head.
Our terms are very simple. Renounce the false king and bend the knee to the queen, or your house burns.
When the desire to kill and burn takes hold and reason is forgotten, you will not even remember what began the war in the first place.
We fight for our queen!
Fear what I've begun.
And once again, deep breath.
Oh, did you breathe that time?
Yes.
Good.
But just because I relax into the blacks more than I do the greens.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That loud dragon roar at the end gets me every time.
Oh yeah. I can't wait to see the dragons fighting. I cannot wait. It's going to be amazing. We've never seen dragons. The only time we've seen dragons fighting was when the zombie ice dragon and that was unfortunately in the darkest night episode where half the time you couldn't actually see what was happening. So if we're going to have, it would be amazing if they do some like full daylight fight scenes with the dragons and we can really see what's going on. It'll be
well, there is that other season 2 trailer where Rhaenys says, Eve Best's character says, a war, there is no bloodier war than a war between dragons. And I say, bring it on.
And there's a scene where there's two dragons on the beach. We don't quite know who they are.
No.
At that point.
What's going to happen next?
So this is a sad start to this trailer because we open at Lucerys' funeral. And obviously they can't have really found much. So we don't really know what they're burning. There is a pyre, but it may be more of a ceremonial thing.
Yeah, I think so. And then we've got that claim again. mirroring Alicent's claim from Rhaenyra, saying, I'm the rightful heir. And she's very calm and she's very considered. And then again, there's that breakthrough in emotion when she says, Alicent's son sits my throne. It's very telling that she says, Alicent's son.
It really is.
And not Aegon.
Also, not my half-brother, not my, a member of my family.
Nothing to do with me, just an usurper.
Yeah, just this bloke.
Just this mullet.
Well, but it is that fact that they are related. That relationship is ignored entirely.
Yeah.
And it's this is a Hightower.
It's a way of justifying what she's about to do.
Yeah. It makes complete... Well, it's also that, you know, when you dehumanize people so that you can kill them, I mean, that's what war propaganda does.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean, I've never done that, but...
Not personally. But, you know, like when they have derogatory names for the soldiers on the other side.
Yes.
So that they're not... They don't see them as fully human. And I think that's what she's doing.
It's a powerful tactic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We see Syrax with Rhaenyra flying to Harrenhal, and this is a little bit of lore, but she flies across the God's Eye Lake in Westeros towards Harrenhal, and she flies past something called the Isle of Faces.
Yes.
Which it's easy to not notice, but if you do notice it, you suddenly see there's this island that's absolutely covered with weirwood trees. And it is this magical place, essentially, like a kind of Isle of Avalon or something in Westeros.
Yeah.
And it was where the Children of the Forest had their center of their power. And we might remember the Children of the Forest.
We do.
Season 4 or 5 of Game of Thrones, when Bran's doing his training to become a zombie, training to become a kind of robot all-seeing eye, three-eyed raven.
The three-eyed raven. Mm. And no one can land on the Isle of Faces.
Why? What happens if you do?
I think you just get blown away.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, it's like...
Like exploded or the wind...
I think the winds just pick up. There's not like the Children of Morris. The Children of Morris? The Children of the Forest.
Oh my God.
The Children of the Forest aren't there laying landmines, little acorn landmines or anything like that. It's just, there's like a... It's not like a curse, but I think there's a protective spell on the place.
Oh, you like in Earthsea.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't get to Roke unless you're allowed to get to Roke.
And it's infuriating because you can see this paradise, but you can never land.
Yeah.
But later in the trailer, someone does land, maybe. Did I imagine that?
Well, we'll cross that
bridge.
We'll
talk about that in therapy.
So we see, as we've discussed, this is now going to be the Black's base at Harrenhal.
Yeah.
We see Syrax on the beach near Storm's End. We can see Storm's End in the background, which is the Baratheon stronghold. And so obviously Rhaenyra is looking for something, assuming that having found out that Luke and Aemond had their air fight near Storm's End.
Yeah.
We assume that she's looking for something.
It's all very sad.
Yeah. So some remnant of Luke or something, some remnant of Arrax or just...
Closure.
Some clothing, some evidence of what happened. And
I said closure.
Yes, I know. And I said clothing.
I thought you'd be uncharacteristically cold there.
No.
Yeah. Oh, clothing.
I mean, I was thinking of, something to bury, something to have like a physical artifact.
You're just thinking of the practical details. I was just on a
But I mean that I think she would get some closure if she could hold her son.
Totally.
And say goodbye to him. And I think that's what she's hoping. Hoping? Why can't I talk today? I think she's looking for some.
She hopens muchly.
I'll just go now, shall I?
No, please. Please stay.
Then we cut to... And one thing that I think is quite interesting is that Daemon is not at the funeral.
Do you know I didn't notice that?
Mm-hmm. Daemon is a funny one. He does sort of...
Really?
Yeah. But quite often when Rhaenyra's going through hard times, he's just a bit like, not interested.
Yeah, you do you. Mm. And then when you come out of your funk, we can carry on this incestuous,
and
competitive
obviously,
relationship.
It's not his son, but he's not there to support her, which I think is a bit of a bit odd for her.
Maybe that's how dragons do things.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure. Daemon is so problematic.
He's then, morally grey.
Oh, so grey. So Rhaenyra's hosting a dinner party, which looks very nice. Delicious looking food.
It does look
good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, and everyone seems to be having a nice time. And she's wearing this very cool dragony dress. And Jace is there and his cousin/fiancé, Baela Velaryon, who, they are cousins. Except they're
cousins.
Actually not related by blood, are they? Oh, yeah, they are a bit. because obviously Daemon is Baylor's father.
Yes.
And Rhaenyra is Jace's mother.
I just think the term cousin, even in our world, is so loose. Yeah. Anyone can
But
be
they're
a
not, because I was thinking they're all Valyri. They've all got Valyrian blood, but of course they don't because they're Arwen Strong's kids.
They're a different line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we see some new characters.
Yes. And can we talk about the costumes here?
Yeah.
Rhaenyra's beautiful dragony dress.
I just think that dress is, and again, it's like, a, you know, her dress, it, she's really leaning into the sort of symbolism of being a Targaryen and the dragon's vibe, but also it kind of, it pairs with the armor we saw Daemon wearing as well.
Yes. And I think the costumes in season two, just from the trailer, look like they've had a big step up.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the French costume designer who worked on season one, Jani Tamim. She's out.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She's been replaced by Carolyn McCall.
Who's Carolyn McCall?
Carolyn McCall is a, I think, well, she's a costume designer. She's been working in Hollywood for a long time. Tamim's costumes in season one apparently received quite a lot of criticism from fans.
Well, we said ourselves that we thought that some of the earlier dresses
bit
were very...
samey.
Yeah, very simple and it made sense thematically, but they didn't look... They just didn't have the sort of grandeur that you sort of think for a royal family.
Yeah.
They were a bit basic.
It'll be really interesting to see what
Rhaenyra was just a
does.
Basic bitch.
Just a basic burlap bitch.
And
stick her in a sack, put a nice belt on.
And also, I mean, you are leaning so heavily into the whole house colours, house symbolism, that there's a lot you can do here. And I mean, I can't remember the name of the designer from Game of Thrones, but Michelle something. Her costumes were amazing, and especially some of the stuff that Dany wore. I mean, when Dany comes out and she's doing her white works operation north of the wall.
Michelle Clapton.
Clapton. And she comes out in this that amazing coat.
Yes.
And it's got this dragony kind of scale effect, but it's very subtle.
Looking at it now.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
It's Alexander McQueen.
Yeah. And it's like, as I always say, where did she get that from? Just tucked away in a drawer, just in case.
Who's paying the dry cleaning bills?
But yeah, I think that I'm looking forward to seeing the war level costumes as well.
The war wardrobe.
Yeah.
Say that quickly.
Yeah, the war wardrobe. Because I think Rhaenyra is going to have some pretty splendid outfits.
Let's hope.
So we can talk a little bit about some of the people sitting around the table without giving too much away.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a beefy looking kind of guy who looks a bit like a Viking. He looks, he's got like red hair. He looks like someone out of the Asterix comics. But he is what's called a dragon seed.
What are they?
Dragon seeds are bastards. The idea is that they have Targaryen blood or Valyrian blood.
Yeah.
But they're not officially members of any house. But because they have this Valyrian blood, they are able...
They can whisper
to talk to the dragons, okay. And they can bond with dragons. And I think we hear in episode 10 again, Daemon says there are some spare dragons, like... Riderless.
Just like knocking around.
Hanging out.
So they're going to need more riders.
Yeah, because though they have more dragons than the Greens have older dragons and they have Vhagar, whereas the Blacks have a lot of young, small
dragons.
Yeah,
the Greens
dragons.
Are more battle ready.
Yeah. So even though it's like a bit of, you know, that your scales are not completely even. And so if they can get these three spare dragons, whose names are the Cannibal.
Ooh.
Sheep Stealer and Grey Ghost.
Sheep Stealer just sounds like an insult.
Well, the Cannibal, Grey I Ghost. Guess. Cannibal is the kind of cool one. And then apparently there's another one called Silverwing, but that one I don't think is wild. I think that's been tamed, but it's just not got a rider. But they're these three completely wild dragons and they're nesting on Dragonstone.
Mm.
And then obviously you've got Vermithor, who we saw Daemon doing his dragon whispering thing
yes.
to. So if they can get, Vermithor's a big old dragon, she's a big old beast as well. So if they can get some more of these dragons, they've got more aerial support and they're raising their game against Vhagar.
And Vermithor was owned by Jaehaerys.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, Hugh Hammer, potential dragon seed, potential rider of Vermithor. There's Alan of Hull. It's Alan, basically, but spelled with a Y in true George R.R. Martin style.
And he's from Hull.
From Hull. Yeah, I don't know where Hull is, but I mean, I know where it is in the UK.
Well, when HS2 gets built, you'll be able to discover it.
Who is a possible bastard of Corlys Velaryon's. And then we see Sir Eric Cargill, who sees a dragon overhead and seems surprised by it. So it's Eric is with the Blacks, we think, and Arryk
by process
is with
deduction.
The Greens.
Yes.
Because you remember one of them, Arryk or Arryk, turns up at Rhaenyra's dead baby's funeral and gives her the crown.
And that was baby Visenya.
I didn't know she had a name.
Yes, I think she was called Visenya.
I didn't think they named
her. Her miscarried child.
Yes, the one that's born in that really torturous birth scene. Another.
We can double
really
check that.
Really torturous birth scene.
Yeah, horrible. But I think she was called Visenya.
Okay, well, that would make sense because, you know, they only have five names. And then we see Rhaenyra going out at night and her Syrax is being handled by some dragon handlers. Yes. And she's marching towards him to go for a ride. We don't know where at this point. And then House Stark forever, we go to the wall.
Yes.
Where Jace, who's got different and better hair, whether it's a wig or his actual hair, just much better than
just
it was.
Just a nicer wig.
Yeah, just generally, is reminding Lord Cregan Stark of the oaths that have been sworn. We only see them from the back, so we don't really get a full face shot of Cregan Stark. But apparently, if you pause your video really on like perfect time there, you can see Ice, Ned Stark's ancestral, the ancestral sword of House Stark, that gets melted down by Tywin and turned into two swords.
So a little freeze frame Easter egg there.
Yeah.
Mm.
So we know it's Cregan. Cregan. And he is apparently known as the Wolf of the North. I think is a very cool name.
How did he get that name?
Well, the house sigil is Wolf.
Yeah.
The dire wolf. And he lives in the North.
Is that it? God. I thought it was going to be something more creative. No, I'm happy with that.
I mean, I assume it's because he's also probably really good in battle. And,
yeah,
and
he's like
fierce.
An incredible hunter, yeah. And he works in a pack.
They called Robb Stark the Young Wolf. So I think they just...
Yeah.
Wolf. They lean into the wolf
They're
thing.
Wild, yeah.
Now, obviously, we know Luke is reminding Cregan about the oaths sworn, but as with Boris Baratheon in the last season... It wasn't Cregan who swore himself. It was his father, Rickon, who bent the knee to Rhaenyra. So as we saw with Boris, just because my dad did something doesn't mean that I'm beholden to that.
Yep.
But obviously the Blacks have got more dragons, as we discussed.
They need land armies.
They don't have the soldiers. So they really, really need the Northern armies. And the one thing about the North is it's very big. It's like as big as the rest of Westeros, pretty much. So recruiting soldiers from the North is going to take time. There isn't like a standing army. They need to get them and then they need to march them down. So there's a fair amount of pressure for this to happen quickly. Let me see another new, though they are an old character, but they're now played
by a new actor.
Yeah. So Gawain Hightower, the last time we saw him, he'd been knocked unconscious by Daemon and we never saw his face. But now he's being paid by Freddie Fox, so we see his recognisable face. And he's in the middle of some sort of melee. He's wearing full armour and a helmet, and he looks really, really anxious about something, but we don't know what.
Freddie Fox, was he in Slow Horses?
Yes.
Yes, he was.
He's in lots of things, but he's in Slow Horses, he's in Pride.
That was
he's
it.
He's in the Riot Club. He usually plays quite posh wankers.
Okay.
Apart from in Pride, in which he's very sweet and lovely. I think he's very cute. You kind of want to cuddle him.
I don't know if I do, but
I do.
I'd seen him in other films.
And then Lord Corlys is there. He's still alive. Yay. He's limping, so he's probably not going to be taking part in the fighting, but he's there counselling Rhaenyra and he's telling her to take no prisoners.
You must rush this beast at its head.
Yes.
He always comes up with the best one-liners.
I think he's essentially saying, as Otto kind of does, is that it's win or die.
Yeah.
There's no...
But be decisive.
Yeah. You just got
take
to crack
action.
On. And we see Daemon ready to go to war again. And he's setting out terms of surrender. That you see him on his dragon. We don't know who he's talking to, but he's saying you bend the knee or
we'll
die.
We'll burn you to the ground.
Yeah. And then we see Alicent and Helena. There's some gates open and they're behind them and they're in this funeral garb. So presumably that's the same scene that we saw in the green trailer.
So that's a flashback. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're looking very sad. We see Baela in battle dress riding her dragon Moondancer.
Looking fantastic.
Looking amazing. And then we hear Rhaenys gets her first lines of the trailer. And as you always, I mean, love her. Love her. She speaks truth to power.
She does.
And she's saying this can't end well.
And she's right.
Yeah.
But we're here for it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
But she's pointing out that often, you know, everything gets really heated. And I mean, you can imagine her being such a good mother. She'd be like, why are you two fighting? Can someone actually explain what's? And they're like, you started it. And then she's like, yes, but what really happened? And she's essentially saying that, but on the countrywide scale. She's basically saying, this is going to get really heated. Battle lust and the bloodlust.
This is going to get away from you.
And no one will remember. No one will remember why they started it, and everyone will be dead, and it's just not going to be great. And then we see Rhaenyra. We don't know who she's talking to at this point, whether that's a continuation of that conversation, but she says that she fears what she has begun.
Yes.
So she's obviously done something that she's not entirely proud of. And then Caraxes roars. Dun, dun, dun.
An amazing double bill.
Yeah.
I feel like June can't come soon enough.
No, it really can't.
It's cruel. Okay, initial response, I guess we're going to war. It's all about the battles.
To war then.
Eight episodes.
That's what I'm going to start saying now.
Carnage.
Are you ready to go? I say, to war.
Yes, Bertie Wooster. And like we said, we're very excited to see all these dragon fights.
Oh,
This aerial combat that's going to be happening. So we've got, what, 10 plus dragons in the fray? No, if there's spare dragons hanging around, probably even more.
We have, hold on a second.
I was trying to count them up before.
I can tell you. We had 16 at the end of last season. Syrax, Caraxes, Vhagar, Meleese, Seasmoke, Vermax, Arax, Vermithor. And then they're the ones we've seen. Then there's Taraxes, Moondancer, Sunfire, Dreamfire, Silverwing, and three wild dragons.
Wow. So how many is that?
16.
16. That is 16.
Except now, of course, Arax, we presume, was bitten in half.
Yes.
So Arax, R.I.P. Arax, is not with us anymore. So we're 15. And of those 15, Syrax, Caraxes, Meleese, Seasmoke, Vermax, Vermithor, and Moondancer are House Black.
Nicely done.
Plus the three wild dragons, hopefully. So they'll have 10.
They've got the advantage numbers-wise.
Yeah.
But whether they've got the advantage in terms of experience, as we've said,
seen. Vhagar could literally just like squash Luke's dragon. He could come down and sit on it, and then that would be the end. Luke's dragon, Jace's dragon.
Jace's dragon. Mm.
Jace's dragon was like, you know, the little...
Arax, R.I.P.
I know.
Don't kill him twice.
Well, it was awful. Arax, though, I mean, you remember when you watched when he lands in the courtyard at Storm's End, and it's like he's on a quad bike, and then there's this jumbo jet.
Yeah.
And it's like,
size matters.
Yeah.
We've got all these Mad King Joffrey, Mad Queen Daenerys vibes going on.
Well, as I said, you know, especially with Aegon. And, you know, in a weird way, I kind of feel for Aegon because he just believes what he's been told, which is that his father did want him to be king. Also, you've got the complication, which is a show-only thing, but the whole Aegon's prophecy, Aegon's dream.
Yes.
If anything happens to Rhaenyra, she's the only one who knows about Aegon's dream. Because obviously Alicent doesn't know about it, so she can't tell Aegon. So then what happens, you know, does that all just disappear into lore? You know, this is, again, like problematic. And so much of this...
Has she told anyone else about it?
No.
She's not even told Daemon about it.
She does say something to Daemon about it, and then that's when he chokes her.
Yes.
And obviously she, at some point, really needs to get her succession plan in order and start talking to Jace. Because otherwise, if anything happens to her, the same thing again. And it does come back to what I was saying, where this is all of Viserys's fault. His weakness and even his desire not to go to war, which was understandable. He wanted a reign of peace and prosperity. But that's led now to this war, which will be...
Well, it's this power vacuum.
Yeah, which is going to be horrendous and the worst war that the realm has ever seen. It's civil war.
But great TV.
Great TV. But Viserys, just succession planning.
Please.
Yeah, always. Just, you know, make sure people know who you want to succeed you and make it very, very clear. And don't appoint Otto. Oh, forgot something. Sir 4chan.
Crispy.
Kristen is wearing the Hand of the King's necklace. So obviously Otto is no longer Hand of the King. He's just hanging out with Alicent.
Oh, he's Red Keep Butler.
For some really weird reason. I mean, obviously, Sir Criston is like very, very proud of his this new position, but he's wearing it even in battle. He's got it on over his armor.
That's curious. Well, we'll find out more about that.
But yeah, I mean, so obviously he's been promoted. So he's probably presumably now in a senior position in the Kingsguard and Hand of the King.
So little talent.
All funneled into one man. So, yeah, I just think that Rhaenys, of all of this, Rhaenys is the only one who's got a level head. She just seems really wise.
And, they should have given her the crown just at the start.
Yeah, she seems wise
and
sensible.
We wouldn't have had a second season, but...
The book would have been a lot shorter.
It would have been a lot shorter.
Yeah, she's the only one. She's got the courage to talk sense to Rhaenyra when everyone else is probably just kind of being a bit of a toady and a lickspittle and just saying, yes, Rhaenyra, whatever you want, Rhaenyra. And she's done that all through Rhaenyra's life. She's been the one who's spoken truth to her and said, you're not going to just be able to bulldoze your way through into this. You have to learn to work with people. And I think that's one of the things, watching season one again, it's like you really see how Rhaenyra just almost obstinately won't learn that she has to be diplomatic with people, that she has to be polite to people, that she has to work with people. She's very much like, I'll be, who's queen, and sort of, you know, I'll be in charge and they'll just have to do what I say and they have no choice. And what she forgets is that the people do have a choice because they have Aegon.
But if we're putting our literary theory hats on, that's her tragic flaw, that's her Hamartia, like Othello's jealousy or King Lear's madness. It's her arrogance, her stubbornness, and Rhaenys is the mentor she doesn't know she needs.
She needs Rhaenys. And I mean, her tragic, she's got two tragic flaws. One is that she's got a womb and the other one is that she's stubborn.
Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, if she was that stubborn but she was a bloke, everyone would think that it was perfectly reasonable.
But wombed and stubborn.
Yeah. So cursed, essentially. On Otto.
Oh.
What a fucking hypocrite that man is, honestly.
Does that even need to be said anymore?
But he's such a hypocrite. He knows perfectly well that he is a usurper. When Viserys dies and Alicent comes to him and says, Viserys is dead and he wants Aegon to be king, Otto's like, yeah, we were going to do that anyway.
Of course you were.
And Otto, and I mean, when, rest in peace, Sir Lyman Beesbury.
When, your favourite cheesecake.
But when he speaks up, what happens to him? It's just horrendous, that
is,
scene.
Yeah, that is deeply uncomfortable.
Yeah. So, yes, I have no time for Otto and his self-serving, we will get peace.
My lady wife.
Yeah, fuck off, Otto.
So basically what we're saying is that this is all Viserys' fault.
Pretty much. Sorry, Viserys, I love you, but you just needed to be clear about what you wanted. It was all very well investing Rhaenyra when you didn't have any other children, but you needed to almost have like a 25th anniversary investiture.
Like a top-up meeting.
Yes. You know, people renew their vows.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what he should have done. Like when Rhaenyra turned 20, he should have done it again and he should have kept doing it and kept saying it all the way through, because the problem was that it's just too easy for people to say, oh, but this happened and then he changed his mind. And that's what the realm were wanting anyway. I mean, we see that when Rhaenyra sees that little play in the streets of King's Landing and everyone's like, yeah, a boy, he's got a boy. Isn't it great? And we see it on The Hunt. We're going to talk about all these episodes, obviously, in future recaps, but
he needed to keep strengthening her claim and kind of break down the small folk, break down the Westerosi, so they accepted her.
Yes, exactly. And it wasn't good enough. Again, it's like, oh, I'd said it 20 years ago, so it should just stand. He needed to keep saying it and do some sort of princess propaganda campaign with her, get her out meeting people and so that people see her actually ruling, actually doing things. Because as we saw in episode 2, when she did take her power, she was actually pretty competent. When she dealt with Daemon and the egg, she did really well. So if people had seen more of that from her, then maybe they would have been more...
That was a big issue for us, though. Yeah. We just felt that she was the queen in training, but she wasn't receiving any
of that help. She
wasn't
getting enough training. And I think that, and then obviously, I mean, Aegon got no training at all. And I think that's one of the other problems, is that Viserys was just a bit like, I mean, he's sort of content to sort of sit back and let things happen. Even when he had all these children, he didn't really seem to get that involved with them.
No, I mean, he's just the peacetime king. And I think with Aegon, he was a boy. He was a flatulent mophead, but he was a boy. And that gave him the right to rule.
Yeah,
and completely. Be accepted by the people. Yeah. It's just, wanton sexism.
And nothing changes.
Nothing. Anyway, back to 2024, where it's much better.
But, I mean, I think these trailers have done the job that they were designed to do, which is to get us talking, get us
like
thinking about what's going to happen potentially. Yeah. There's still a lot of unanswered questions. We've really tried not to talk too much about
specific... I think we've done a good job of skirting around some of those issues.
Like, we could have talked about what would we think this is, what battle we think this is, or, you know, be like referring to the books, but I just think I quite like not really knowing, and then let the story unfold as it does on screen, because we know anyway with the unreliable narration of the books, just because something's in the book doesn't mean that's how Ryan Condal and his team are going to choose to interpret it.
That's
for
very
the screen.
Interesting.
So
yes.
it could go in very different ways, and so it's quite nice to be surprised, I think. But I mean, I'm so stoked.
The adrenaline is pumping through my veins. I cannot wait to war, but it will stop.
We'll see. Not long to wait. What? How many weeks?
About 8 weeks.
Yeah, 10 weeks.
8 weeks of theorizing and pumping out our propaganda for our respective teams.
And it's because there are three trailers now, obviously, with the two and then the original one. So it's very possible that HBO will do another one between then and now. Fingers crossed.
You would think there'd be another one with a month to go.
Yeah. So if another trailer drops, we'll be back to talk about that. But in the meantime, you can join us for our season one recaps.
Yep. So we continue next week with episode 3.
This week.
This week.
Yeah. Well, we record. No, hang on. Where are we? Who are we? What are we doing?
we've got
to record episode 3, and then that will be out next week. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Yeah.
But episode 2 will be out this week.
This week.
If this goes out this week as well.
Yes.
So episode 2 might go out before this.
Who knows?
Who knows? In the world of Westeros.
We're leaning into chaos here, people.
Yes. But thank you very much, Princess Michelant, for a great chat.
And thank you, Maester Joseph. And yes, as we say, please join us for recaps and then keep following us to see if we talk more trailers, more news.
More sense.
Well.
Well.
Well, let's not promise that.
On that note, goodbye.
Goodbye.